When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod for another big episode off the back of the Six Nations. Some great games on the weekend. France getting up, Ireland getting up, Italy doing their thing. Lots of entertaining stuff there. We'll look at that, how the teams progress through the tournament, and take a little look ahead to that big matchup between Ireland and South Africa in July and how that might play out. I know you guys care about that because we had 983 comments across the two YouTube posts about Ireland versus South Africa as the best team in the world. People are fired up. The Brumbies got up. We didn't see that coming, did we, Jip? They got up and beat the Highlanders, the Hurricanes, and the Crusaders. The Crusaders went down. What's going on there? Lots to talk about this week. A massive turnaround in Opiki as well with the Blues getting up and really giving it to the Poa. Some really cool questions as well from you this week that we'd like to get into as well. So before we get going, James Parsons over here. Mate, we've been talking about the Brumbies. Something changed.
Between them and the Waratahs, I'm being made to look very silly. Very silly. But I mean, in all honesty, I do like it because it's actually becoming hard to pick.
Yeah.
And I do regularly talk about, I suppose, that unpredictable nature of the NRL. And I feel like it's engaging. The crowds looked good. It was, I think each week's getting better and better. It's telling a more positive story about Super Rugby, which is exciting for the game.
Yeah, and we'll be looking at that in our tipping competition a little bit later on. Of course, the winner of our tipping comp gets to come on the show at the end of Super Rugby. Tipping comp, Bryn Hall, you're not walking away from that yet?
What am I, 198 or something like that? Is that wrong?
Yeah, 198. You keep on picking the Crusaders.
And so I will, mate. I'll keep doing it for the rest of the year.
Attaboy.
Yeah, it's been it's been tough. I think more so just around coming back to what Jip was saying. I think the competition side of it, you don't know who to pick. And I think we've talked around it, you know, the last 2 to 3 years, the competitiveness of the competition. And so we've definitely got there in the first four rounds. And if you're a Crusaders fan, yeah, she's a bit tough. But obviously got the old derby coming up at Eden Park. So hopefully the boys can turn a corner and take some positives, which I thought there were a lot of positives. I know they didn't get the result done, but considering how close that game was, they probably should have won that game in the last couple of minutes where, the Hurricanes scored at the end.
Yeah, we'll get onto that game. It's always a thrill of my year when we go, who's going to pick who? The Blues versus Saints. So we'll do that later on. But let's start with the Six Nations. Well, Ireland get up. And so that was a close fought win, though, wasn't it, over Scotland? It wasn't easy.
No, and I mean they had a lot of opportunities. They weren't as clinical as they probably would expect. They had 21 turnovers. So a team known for their systems on attack didn't really break down the Scottish D to get a clinical victory as we've sort of been used to. So it's sort of 2 weeks in a row that they've sort of struggled. But win's a win. They get there. Although even on the other side of the ball defensively. For Ireland, they tackled around 83%, but similar to England the week before. Good line speed, and they caught Scotland. They only allowed them 26% gain line. So, I mean, you're not going to win a test match. Although they came close through probably the errors of Ireland, that defence is still a big weapon of the Irish. Even though the accuracy may read low, if you actually watch it and go into it, it's pretty effective.
What had Scotland and England done to maybe the Springboks could look at when it comes to facing them later in the year to really stop this Irish team from getting into their stride?
Yeah, well, I think more so on the weekend, the turnovers were a big part of that. And, you know, I think for the South Africans, when they had that result in the World Cup, the physicality at the breakdown and being able to slow down their ball is going to be pretty important. And the high line speed pressure that they do bring seems to give Ireland a bit of difficulty. And you look on the weekend, you know, I think in the first, what was it? In the first half, you know, the Scottish were over 100 tackles and 174 tackles were done by the 50th minute. You know, so they threw in a lot, and especially in that second half, they definitely took it. I thought they took it up a gear in terms of their attack. But, you know, to the Scottish's credit, the brave defence that they did do, being able to hold on and really just, I guess, try to stay in the game with their defensive abilities. They tried to stay in the game, but then obviously Sheehan scores, and also Andrew Porter scores that try in the 65th minute, which probably gets the result done, even though, you know, Jones does score in the 77th minute. But I think, you know, they still do have that ability, I believe, that they can play the high phase count. And so, you know, that takes a lot of ability and, I guess, discipline in terms of being able to try hold on to the ball and being able to be clinical at the breakdown, which they did do. But to Jip's point, when you've got turnovers like that, you know, that's probably something that we're not accustomed to seeing from this Irish team in the past 4 years. So they'll look to want to clean that up. But I think knowing the South Africans and how they defend, they'll know that they're going to have to tidy that up, and knowing that there's going to be some physicality at the breakdown and some high defensive pressure coming to them in that two test match series in South Africa.
They're a very well-drilled team, but also their discipline, like four penalties to give away in a test match, that is not many. Like, you're not giving the opposition any chance to get their game going. And then defensively, they, you know, didn't allow them to get across that game line. So they sort of stifled Scotland's momentum. But credit to the Scots, they kept coming. But they never, to me, really looked like they were going to win that game. And their discipline, they had 13 penalties, which sort of just let the pressure off. Even with the high error count, it just gave too many opportunities for Ireland to have the ball in hand rather than defending.
That 174 tackles that Bryn mentioned, as a coach, at what number are you worried about the fatigue on your players? What is a normal number?
I reckon if you're getting, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bryn, but if you get over that 200, there's going to be immense fatigue. And if you use the Crusaders, for example, on the weekend, they tackled 220 times. So there was only so long they could hold the Hurricanes out. They did actually a formidable job to be ahead at that point of the game through their defence. But as we saw, they eventually got over and won that match.
And Bryn, is that a number that you keep track of during a game, you know, or is that something that you just have to worry about later because that's the flow of the game?
Yeah, you don't, in game, you're not, you know, you don't have a real clear idea around what it might look like numbers-wise, but you get a feel and sense of, like, you know, if there's a lot of mistakes that have happened, and, you know, unfortunately the Crusaders at the moment, it's a continuing theme in their attack at the moment that the word's been used clunky, which they're giving teams a lot of opportunities to then attack. So I think when you kind of do feel it, and then I guess it's being able to find solutions so you don't continue to keep tackling, whether it's going to your set piece, being able to get some dominance in that way, or kicking game with your contestables to get the ball back and trying to, I guess, nullify the defensive numbers that you are clocking up. So yeah, that 200 or, you know, 230, you know, when you get into that kind of realm, it's pretty hard to be able to then try and sustain that for a whole 80 minutes, which we probably saw on the weekend with the Hurricanes coming over the top in the last couple of minutes.
I think, like, coaches would be aware, not of the tackle, but of the possession stat. And everyone knows defence is going to empty the tank a lot more. So although you may be energetic in that first half and you're on defence the most of it, it's normally that back end, that last 20, where that impact will come. So that's when they may adjust, when they bring subs on. It may be early after halftime or even at halftime.
And maybe change the positions that come on earlier, the ones who are doing more tackling, I presume?
Yeah, and I suppose it's around those, probably the tight five, the front rows, as we see, are normally the first and loosies, and then leave yourself the ability in the backs to, I suppose, manipulate as the game goes on.
I'm presuming that most of those tackles are happening in and around the edges, Bryn, so it's a... It's not such a big worry for a halfback in behind. You're just telling them, hey, get in there, boys, get it done.
Yeah, it's certainly not me getting at the high tackle counts, but yeah, you know, you like to see your Tom Christie, your Billy Harmons, and your loose forward trio, you know, they're in that kind of 25 to 30 realm, which, you know, has tend to happen a lot in the last couple of years, especially when I was with Tom Christie, he'd have those kind of tackle numbers. And so, yeah, it's a war of attrition, and your bench is pretty important coming on in those last 20 minutes. And I guess the depth in your 23 is pretty important when you've got, you know, 200 plus tackles.
Mate, Finlay Christie, 11 tackles on the weekend, top tackler for the Blues. So he's getting out there. I don't know what that says, but I don't think you want your halfback being your top tackler.
Yeah, yeah. But not that they conceded any points.
No, they didn't. They defended. I mean, it was the same against the Drua, isn't it? The Blues' defence is pretty well drilled. They probably just haven't got that flow on attack as we saw in times in rounds one and two.
But just to go off a little on the Irish as well, I thought Jamieson Gibson-Park was probably the best test match that I've seen him play, considering what was at stake. And I think with Johnny Sexton leaving and obviously Crowley getting into the swing of things at international level, I think the identity more so has gone through Jamieson now, and how his kicking game, his running game, his decision-making skills. I think, you know, arguably with DuPont being out, I'd arguably have to say, you know, he'd be in conversation with best player in the world, I think, considering his Six Nations form and how he played on the weekend.
I'm a big fan of Jamieson's, obviously. Yeah. And Bryn knows halfback play a lot better than me, so he's probably seen it. But I do think Johnny Sexton being removed has freed up a lot of players and probably allowed them to contribute a little bit more during the week, Bryn. You know, like, that's a big part. They can sort of own this team together now. And although they've probably just scraped in the last 2 weeks, I think they're still operating pretty efficiently.
So if you look at the fact they've won the last three against South Africa, now going over there in July, and I know we haven't seen South Africa since the World Cup and we'll only see them probably once before that series, would you be confident that this Irish team will head over to South Africa, presuming it's a strong South African side, to pick up a Test Series win the way they did in New Zealand last year?
Oh, I think they can do it. There's no doubt about that. But they are going to face tougher conditions than they did in New Zealand. Like, I'm assuming they'll be on the hive out. Like, as much as you can prepare for that, nothing will prepare your lung capacity for that. So I think that element, whenever they get over there, how long they get to train in these environments will be critical. And because it is, I suppose, 1v2 in the world, you'd have to think Russie isn't going to blood too many. I think he'll see this as a notch on his belt, so no doubt South Africa will have their main guys in there as well.
You never know, though, with Russie, April. Anything could happen here.
We could almost see an 8-0 split on the bench, couldn't we? Who knows? But, I think what Gyp said, when it comes to the conditions, it's, you know, both of us have played there and how hard it is. You can prepare as much as you want, but, you know, the lungs are burning that first 20 minutes, especially if it's in Pretoria or, Johannesburg. I'm not too sure where it is, but presuming that it's going to be in one of those two stadiums throughout that two-match test series. But correct me if I'm wrong, though, they do plan the URC, the Irish teams, the URC Cup. That's so right. At least they might have a little bit of understanding what that preparation might look like, and I guess the idea of not being able to breathe nicely in the first test match possibly. But it'll be a tough one, and no doubt the South Africans will be ready for that. And by the comment section, they'll probably be seeing it as a nice egg to see if they're number one in the world still.
Well, that'll decide it. Let's be honest. The discussion we had will be decided in June.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was interesting because people were like, well, don't we have a World Cup to decide that? You know, and you can kind of see it, that's quite simple, but the world's not that simple.
No.
The world's not that simple. World Cup champions maybe is the right call right now, but...
I think anyone would take a World Cup, as I said last week, but best team in the world.
Yeah, 100%. Now, France, I'm really interested to see what you guys thought of Ramos at 10. I mean, obviously his goal kicking is sublime and it helped them get that win, but Ramos at 10 in Test football?
I think the whole team around as well is starting to find their groove. They looked extremely powerful. I thought for England as well, I just thought it was a great game of rugby. Went down to the wire, obviously, full of attacking flair. But it's the consistency for both teams. I feel, not only week to week, but throughout a game, just those peaks and troughs and how long you remain in those are going to be critical. But from an All Blacks point of view as well, I think England can be really confident with the opportunity they have coming down here now. They seem to be in a good groove attacking-wise, but defensively, yes, again, some of the Ireland, a little lower percentage, but they held the French to 36% gain line, which we know when the French go well, they're sort of 55-60% gain line because of their miraculous threats of DuPont on that.
Bryn, the English did really well in and around the half time on either side, and the momentum swung considerably at times during that game. So when England had the momentum their way, what were they doing best?
The physicality of the breakdown, more so. I think, you know, any time you want to be able to score points, and you look at it, you know, the 40th, Lawrence two tries, and the 46th minute was Smith. You know, they were able to play on top of the French team. And I think more so, what I've seen in the past couple of matches, they do have an idea, not an identity, but they're going in between two around their kicking game. If they don't get that momentum, they do go to that contestable game, which I think you do need it at the international level. I think you can't play full tongs for the full 80. You've got to have an ability to be able to stunt momentum through your kicking game or kick chase and effort areas, which I think they're really, really good at. But I think Ford and Marcus Smith coming on very early, those two interchanging. Gyps talked about it a lot and around Marcus Smith being the 10, but you know him being at fullback as well and being able to punch onto the ball flat and getting the ball in his hands in that second pivot role, I think is really, really good for England. That's not to say Fairbank hasn't been playing well, but Marcus Smith just is that different person. And I think, you know, George Ford's, I think it was Lawrence's second try, you know, playing flat at the line and, you know, the likes of Underhill and Earl getting over that advantage line nice and flat. It's a great DNA for their attacking ability. So, you know, coming down to New Zealand, you know, you'd hope to think that they want to try and replicate that attacking ability that they've had in that Six Nations competition. But yeah, I think, look, for that 21 points in 6 minutes, you know, it was pretty good in terms of their attack. And I think for the French in that first half, their counter-attack ability was really, really good. And, you know, the loose balls and being able to play that counter-attack was really good in that first half for the French, scoring, you know, a couple of tries. So, but England, I think, you know, they're in a good spot. And I think moving forward, you'd have to be happy considering where they were 12 months ago. And we weren't exactly giving them positive reinforcement around the way they were playing.
Was that the best, most unintentional try assist for Fiku's try ever? Like, how many times have you seen a loose ball just get hacked and land in the midst and they score a try? Like, I just couldn't believe that. I had to rewind it going, did he just, like, fly hack that? Definitely did. I've actually never seen someone who hacks it lead to a try.
And just one more thing, I think, this is quite how I want to say this, but I think of Garek, the number nine, if he ended up starting, I think for the Six Nations, for the French, and obviously Luku was there at the start, but I think they're a different team. Very, very similar to Dupont in terms of the way that he can influence games with his attacking ability, attacking kicks, and just brought a little bit of life, I thought, in that game with the way he played.
Massively, and his support play. His support lines were outstanding. Yeah. He was always engaged. He's always in and around the ball. But I still think they could have given him better breakdown ball, you know, like it did give the English a lot of time to get off the line. So sometimes it was a little bit slow, but when they had flow going, absolutely, he was a weapon.
Before we move on from Six Nations, let's have a little chat about Italy's development. You know, they've come a long way from an abysmal World Cup, really. I mean, it really was quite disappointing for them. They appeared to be better than that heading into the tournament. Mm. And they are coming together, although it's really hard to know against a winless Welsh team exactly what that win means.
Yeah, I think it means a lot, especially away from home. But a lot of their success, because Scotland had a hell of a lot of ball, Wales again had a lot of ball, they tackled at 90%, they made 228 tackles, and their defence actually allowed only got... Wales only had 34% gain line, so they're up in the face, they're pushing and challenging skills and forced 16 turnovers. So I think a lot of their success, and you know what it's like, Bryn, like a lot of energy comes from defence, like you can sort of feel it go through your team, and then when you get on attack, you're a little bit more relaxed and the passes stick and so forth. So I think off the back of a good focus in and around their defensive breakdown, they won 9 turnovers at the breakdown, and you know, if not stealing it, slowing it down to allow that line speed. And their tackle accuracy is impeccable for the amount of line speed they do bring.
The defensive side has been is a big thing around Test match footy. And when you operate at those numbers that Gyps saying, you know, it almost empowers you as a player when you're getting those kind of turnovers and I guess having that tackle percentage really, really high. But I think also their attack as well, it's not just the fact that they do have that X factor out wide, but their lines and their animation in and around asking questions of the defence has been a lot better. I think it's grown throughout the tournament, and I think when you do have results and you're winning and they obviously had a draw, you know, it builds confidence with things in and around this attack and this defence. It's working and you build confidence off that. So, and I think one big thing this throughout the Six Nations competition is that they've been able to stay in moments in big games. You know, probably in the last couple of years, they've had the ability when Kieran Crowley was there, but they weren't able to hold on for long passage of plays, whether that's on attack or defence, and been able to win games in crucial moments. So, yeah, for the Italians, post the Rugby World Cup, they've gotten a lot better. And again, I think the standard of what the Six Nations is now. You know, the Welsh finished last, but I think the consistency and the ability of all six teams in the competition, I think it's the world-leading competition in the world.
If you're Warren Gatland and you've had a whole bunch of retirements, another one now with George North, and then all of the injuries that he's had as well with the likes of Anscombe out, how do you feel about this winless? I mean, obviously you're disappointed, but, you know, how down should he be about this in the position that his team's in?
I think the interesting question I'm thinking about is what evolutions have they tried to bring to their game post-World Cup? Because they are definitely trying to play a lot more, especially in their own half, which is to their demise last week and this week. So if they're changing systems and they're bloody new players, then I don't think it's throw the baby out with the bathwater, but he's probably, you know, he's a competitor. He won't like it. he will not be happy at all. So I don't see him actually walking away. He'll want to get them in the position he left them in before returning in place of Wayne Pivac. So the answer is, if they're changing things, then I don't think it's... I felt like the last 2 weeks, in particular, they didn't have any flow in their attack in particular because it was new. For international level, that's the only way I could sort of convince myself that they weren't just going off the cuff, left, right and centre.
Well, I think, you look at it, obviously, if there is one team in the Six Nations that you want to bring down under, it's probably the Welsh, and unfortunate for Gats, who Jip and I have had a little bit of time to with Bryn. But, yeah, I think Joe Smith will be pretty happy in terms of what's happened at Super Rugby level, I think, you know, with the competitiveness of the Australian teams. And I think that the way they are playing, you know, I think he's going to be pretty excited in terms of what's happening down there. So probably a bit of time in the review to see what it's going to look like for Warren and what do you think, you know, the changes that he can make to come down here and try and win a test series on Australian soil. But yeah, I think Joe Smith will be pretty happy knowing, I think, what's happening at Super Rugby Pacific, considering they've beaten New Zealand teams and been really competitive with the style of play that they are playing.
I do think as well, like, the Welsh have had a lot of disruption off the field, you know, the last sort of 12 months. I just think that doesn't help, you know, like, if the whole place isn't in order, it is hard for a high-performing team to perform because there's a lot of distractions, and we've heard it time and time again from the best sports people in the world. You need to be in the zone or in flow to be able to, you know, sort of compete at the highest level and not miss your mark. And if there's distractions taking away from that, you know, your cognitive capacity can get overloaded pretty quickly and take you off that job.
It sounds like they'll have a strategy in place sometime soon, at least some sort of strategy to look at and work on sometime soon, so maybe the Welsh will be moving forward.
Hopefully.
And out of the doldrums.
Hopefully.
Because it has been pretty dire, hasn't it? But moving back to the Aussie teams that Bryn brought up, obviously the Reds, phenomenal on the weekend against the Rebels. The Brumbies, we touched on earlier, somehow getting up over the Highlanders in Dunedin. And the Waratahs, a team who have only got one win, but probably deserve a whole bunch better than where they're sitting on the table right now. They've been competitive.
Yeah, I mean, depending on where they finish, they may look back at rounds 3 and 4 and be a bit disappointed they didn't make the most of those opportunities. Again, it's another side that is putting a lot of defensive pressure. The result against the Crusaders was through defensive pressure, as mentioned previous weeks. And again, they had that defensive pressure against the Highlanders, and they brought it against the Blues. And the Blues, who are a team that have been comfortably getting over the gain line, but the last 2 weeks, it's sort of, I feel like their breakdown speed hasn't been as quick as what we saw, particularly in Whangarei against the Drua. They were really vicious in their cleans and allowed a guy like Stephen Perifetta to dominate. At the moment, he's carrying so many times because the breakdown, I think, is a little slower. So Rush D, like we saw against the Hurricanes and the Waratahs, is forcing him to carry because he can't risk that pass. And that's just stemming their whole flow. And then you lose someone like Rico early. I think they'll be really happy with that win to escape out of there with 4 points and get back home for the big derby. But they're going to, like, the Crusaders will attack that breakdown pretty hard. So I think that's the key area of focus for them because every other part of their game is going really well. Because defensively, they held on strong too. Like, man, I made a note of Finlay making 11 tackles, and I still feel, again, it's a breakdown issue because he's having to slip in because you're not slowing their ball. So he's having to make those tackles or put himself in a position where there's a hole to make the tackle. Great job, but you know, we always used to look at that, our halfback's tackle stats as a type five because, you know, our coaches are like, man, if your halfback's tackling too much, you're not doing your job. Mm. So the ability to slow that ball and get time to get set and get the right people in the right positions should make their defence even stronger to break down.
What did you see from the Blues, Bryn?
Yeah, I think it was that. I think the physicality battle, you know, Jip loves the stats around the gain line. I think, you know, in the first half, it was 68% for the Waratahs and 56 gain line percentage for the Blues, you know. So when you're talking around the Blues and when they're all firing, that gain line is pretty important in terms of their breakdown and being able to get quick ball. They're under that 3 second, what Finlay Christie gets there very quick and they're able to play on top of things. But I think also as well, you know, look, they did have two tries disallowed, which, you know, probably could have helped. And it doesn't help when Stevie obviously had the kicking, didn't kick very well, which, you know, he'll go away and be better in that. So there were points out there that they did leave. But I think, you know, between the two teams in the first half, there were 20 errors between the two teams, you know. So it felt a very stop-start game. And, you know, the Blues weren't able to score those two tries and weren't able to accumulate points through their kicking game with Stevie getting those points. So in the end, I think, you know, getting the result and being able to get a win ugly like that, ideally, you know, Vern Cotter and co will be able to talk around what they can do to get better. But considering being in Sydney against the Waratahs team, who I think, you know, arguably could have won that game, but discipline issues for them were pretty bad. I think they had 11 penalties within the first 50, 55 minutes, you know, so they didn't help themselves. And so it seemed like both teams weren't able to assert dominance for long periods of time. And, you know, it kind of felt like that with the scoreboard in terms of being a low pressure, a low scoring game.
Yeah, and like you say, like, I was quite surprised how high the gain line percentage for the Blues was, because when you look at defenders beaten and clean breaks, like five clean breaks and 12 defenders beaten, for a Blues side, you're so used to seeing 30 or 40 defenders beaten, you know, probably 10 or 11 clean breaks. So they did have that fastball, but they didn't utilise it as well as was seen. And I think, as I say, I just think there is that line speed pressure, and everyone knows how important Stephen Petifetta is to the Blues now. They're really trying to challenge him and his skill set and how he's operating. So you'd love to see, if it's Bryce Heem at second five or whoever is, just take a little bit of pressure off, maybe promote themselves as a first receiver and allow Stevie that time to bounce out the back, like we always saw Mwanga out the back of Havili. And I think Goodhue would come on that down line, Bryn, and allow that freedom to free that ball up the back and just buy Stephen some time, because if he gets that time, similar to Damian McKenzie, he has the ability to just hold that ball and put people in holes.
Stephen Petifetta is having a terrible day off the tee. You can see something's not going right there. And, you know, the game could have been iced a little bit earlier if those things had started going over. As a captain, when you see that that's not going right, were you surprised that they didn't tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, Zahn's going to have a crack at this, or someone else is going to have a crack at this?
No. I think if he was a new kicker and you didn't know the history, then maybe, you know, like Bryn did on his debut for me. let it go, James. You'd yank him. You'd get rid of him. But for Stevie, he's so good. Like, it was just an off day, and I don't think anyone... Like, if he was struggling mentally, he'll pull himself.
Fair enough. Let's get back to Super Rugby. Crusaders 10, Hurricanes 14. Obviously a massive result, one because the Hurricanes are an outrageous success at the start of this year, and two because the Crusaders are the exact opposite. Interested in both of your takes on this. Like, when you see what the Crusaders are doing, where do you see the main problem?
Well, I actually think they made a step in the right direction last week. Their efficiency at set piece was at 90% line-out time, 100% scrum time, so that was helpful. I think they really knuckled down in their defence. The one area that they're struggling to get going is breaking down the opposition defence. So I do think it's the attacking side of the ball. I don't think you can question, because defence is a ticker thing. You can't question their effort. But even that example before, so often we've seen Havili play that role with, you know, imagine a Levi Almua. If we could get him, only two carries on the weekend, get him on that down line outside Havili's shoulder, promoted off the rolling maul, and then buy time for a Hoihipa out the back. I know it seems simple, but I just think that's playing more to their strength. And it was something that, you know, Bryn will probably talk to it better, but it's something that Richie really drove and ran really well, was promoting that that first receiver to buy himself the time out the back?
Yeah, it's tough. I think obviously considering the conditions, the attacking game probably wasn't going to be, it wasn't going to be that attacking game. Look, there was, you know, 97 kicks, you know, 47 for the Crusaders and 40 for the Hurricanes in turn. So, you know, when I saw the weather for that game, I thought, you know, this is probably the perfect conditions for the Crusaders to play, considering their attack wasn't going so smoothly the last three or four rounds. But to the credit of the Hurricanes and Broegard, and I thought Brett Cameron, you know, he controlled the game really well and been able to stay in that battle and not been able to flinch in terms of the game management side. But, you know, again, you look at the first 30 minutes, you know, there were 9 turnovers from the Crusaders and Gyps, you know, spot on around the attack. It's just not firing on all cylinders at the moment. And that's to come back. I think, you know, they've had changes at 10s, they've had changes at 9s. There's been some injuries that have come in throughout the week and over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, that's no excuse. And knowing that environment, the attention to detail and the preparation side will be really good around that group. So I think accountability individually, I think, is a big part of that. When you're making errors like that, you can get away with errors when you're under pressure and you're trying to get that ball away. But when it just comes back to your own individual responsibility of getting the right thing at the right time, they're not getting that done at the moment. And so, but to what Gyp said, I think there has been an improvement of the way they are going from where they went against the draw. Their set piece was really good and they went back to that kicking game with the contestables off 9, which they were able to build momentum off that. But the attacking area is probably one of the big work-ons, which I think they've got to make some big improvements, especially against the Blues and the Chiefs in the next 2 weeks. If they do want to get the result, they have to be able to be better in that attacking side of the game.
They were 30% gain line ball on attack last week against the Drua, same again against the Canes. Like, for me, there's one player that just is glaringly obvious that can get across the gain line, and that's Levi Moore. Mm-hmm. Somehow, orchestrating him to be involved a lot more in phase play, offset piece strikes, whatever it may look like, 2 carries, and you're not getting the gain line, just doesn't seem good use. And even if they double team him, that's when the opportunities will be to manipulate the defence and pick those holes apart late. But I think initially, getting him involved early, you know, you want to see him. Mark Talia, like, he's 18 carries a week. You know, you want to see a guy, and I know Levi's a centre, so he can't hover around the ruck, but somehow getting him the ball and getting across the gain line for them to play their up-tempo speed will be a massive part of, I don't think it's a lot. I don't think they're far away. Mm. They look, you know, really, really good, I believe, on the weekend, and potentially, you know, did well to be in the contest, and that was off the back of the defence. Like, the Hurricanes lived in that 22, and they only came away with 2 tries and won very, very late. You know, like, it was a pretty strong performance.
Whanga Nuku is person, Bryn, who could have made a difference there. Like, last year, he was the guy who was making those metres around the ruck and, well, anywhere, really.
Yeah, that, again, and there have been some guys that have left, like, obviously Lester around that area was great in and around getting over the advantage line. But I think if you're not going to use Levi in the way that, you know, he should be used in terms of being able to get over that gain line, then, you know, what's the point of having him as your centre? Mm. Because there is a lot of, I guess, things with being in that environment in terms of what's required of the centre, not just with go forward ball, but your communication, your game management, and being able to run those lines, get guys running off you and communicating to get into that space as well. So if you're not going to use Levi in that ability of getting those high carries of the 9 to 10, then, you know, it's probably better off having a centre that can complement Davey in the game management side, being able to try and, I guess, execute a better attacking ability. We've been able to have communication or been able to use a run pass kick option or something else. You know, Ryan Crotty, who I thought came on very early in that second half, is really good in and around that area to be able to try and open up teams, not just with the ability of the physicality side, but more so the mental game and the chessmanship and the gamesmanship, which I think is really important in the attacking ability of the Crusaders team as well.
I wonder if Levi could play Wayne.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's a good point you make about Lester. I didn't think of that. Thinking out loud here. Don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that.
Give him some freedom, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think there's plenty of wingers out there at the moment. You look at Tava Tava Nawai. You don't have to have top flight gas. Even Severis, I don't think, has world-class top-line gas. It's about how you get off the mark and who you beat, you know?
He looks really quick, though, at the moment. I feel like he's the quickest he's looked in a long time, Severis. Yeah. Like, some of those covering defensive plays he did to get back was just unbelievable. He has been doing his bit and then some.
Very busy, very busy. Let's give some flowers, though, to the Hurricanes. You know, while the Crusaders lost, the Hurricanes, with probably an underrated squad, a very talented squad, are doing some really good things. So our first question from a viewer for this particular episode, send us an email, aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz, or put it within the comments section and we'll try to get your questions in. This comes from Ruben Detoy. Based on the performance of the Hurricanes over the last 4 weeks, how likely are the likes of Duplessis Kirifi, Asafa Aumua, Braden Yose and Ruben Love to be in the All Blacks this year?
Well, they're definitely in the discussion, that's for sure. And I want to... I think Duplessis, Kirifi and potentially Asafa Aumua are givens because they've all been in that All Blacks 15, so you'd have to think they're on the trajectory to the All Blacks. The other two are definitely probably the next four-year cycle and building towards the World Cup, but you'll see... Man, like, I texted you guys after that game and I said, I want to talk number eights because, like, he was just so impressive. At both sides of the ball, busy, you know, through 60 minutes, he got 13 carries, 9 tackles, and those 13 carries were 69 metres, and he's just rapid. He's something different, you know. And then you look at Cullen Grace. I thought Cullen Grace was outstanding as well. We've got his stats here, 10 carries, 18 tackles. Hoskins Satutu's been playing well. Luke Jacobson's been doing a great job. There's Caelan Boshier, who's playing at 7, but he can play 6, 7, 8. You know, he fills that sort of blackheader role in this All Blacks mix. So there's a lot of players putting their hand up, but Yossi in particular has had a... Well, now Artie's gone, he's getting some regular game time, but even when he got game time last season, he did some freakish things, particularly off the back of a scrum with his pace. And Ruben Love, I just think it's a matter of time.
Yeah,
like he does. He looks in the best form I've ever seen of him. He looks really comfortable. Hopefully his injury's not too bad.
He looks quick too, Bryn. The way he got back to stop that try from happening and dive on the ball.
Rapid.
Yeah, I think if you're coaches, you love seeing those kind of efforts. You know, I think when it comes to the international level, working off the ball and being able to put yourself into places, which is I think important in international rugby, and Ruben Love can do that. His distribution, we've talked about in the first 3-4 weeks, to get the ball across. He did it again on the weekend. He was able to get that ball passed to Naholo on the edge with pressure on, which is really important. And, you know, I think the comeback with Braden Yossi, you know, you look at, I think, why the Hurricanes are going so well at the moment, it's the post-contact meters. You know, Lakai and Yossi are at the top of the competition when it comes to post game line meters, you know. So I think with the attrition of what's required at the international level, if you can do that at Super Rugby Pacific, you know, it gives you a great opportunity to go at the international level to be able to do that as well. And I think also the probably unsung hero, I think, for the Hurricanes is Brett Cameron. You know, he leads the competition in kick meters, and Jip, you know how important it is to be able to try and win games through your kicking game. And it's such a big part of the game now to be able to play with the ball, and whether that's contestables or kicking long. And I think Brett Cameron, he's been an unsung hero to be able to put that team in the right parts of the field, along with Rory Gard, who again was unlucky to not get that try, that heads up play with a highlight reel for Jipper.
The knock on,
yeah, I think Rory Gard, Brett Cameron and Ruben Love, the spine in terms of that Hurricanes team, along with that forward pack of the Lucys, they were my pick. They were my dark horse for the year, and they're living to that at the moment.
Can I just give a shout out for the rules as well? 41 minutes in play. That's the first time I've seen a Super game go above 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So, and every other one was sort of around that 38, 39 minute mark. So it is having an impact, the adjustments they're making, which is giving us a better spectacle.
Just because you said that, I'm going to have a crack at the rules. That Roy got knocked down was ridiculous. Like, to me, and I know it's part of the rules, so, you know, so be it, they got the call right. But the ball carrier should be the one who is responsible for whether or not the ball gets knocked out or not. I think in the tackle, if you intentionally slap the ball out of their hand, that's their fault for not securing the ball properly. Surely the onus has got to be on the ball carrier, not on the person trying to dislodge the ball.
Nah. I don't like that.
Why is that?
I just think it's a deliberate act. It's like, it's just a negative play. Like, if he smacks his arm or whatever, I'm all for that. But if you touch the ball directly,
yeah,
I just think that's your choice to do that, and you've knocked it on.
It's his choice not to hold the ball securely enough, and to the point where he might be able to let it go in contact.
I think if it's done right, you can get away with it. If you get the ball and you push it and your hand's going backwards to go backwards, then it's going to be backwards. But I think on the weekend, like, it was pretty could see pretty clearly that it was taking the ball out of the hands, going in a forward motion. And if you are, and probably Cam, if he had his time again, he probably knows that, you know, if he does it again, if you smack someone's arm or that wrist, then it's not going to be a knock on. So, yeah, usually, Ross, I do agree with a lot of the things that you do say, but unfortunately, I'm on the opposite spectrum.
I'm going to die on this hill. Like, I just think that's ridiculous. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I would like it in the sense that I would like it in the sense that somehow a game puts a responsibility on the ball carrier. Because a lot of the game is revolved around the defender making decisions, like tackle height, you know, close to the line, you've got to have your hands behind the line. But how are you actually going to tackle a guy that's about 30 centimetres off the ground? You know, you don't want to hit his head. Do you just let him score? Mm. So from that aspect, I could like it that there's a rule that puts the ball carrier on notice.
Look, I appreciate you trying. I appreciate you trying to appease me, even slightly. Actually, we've had a really cool viewer question come through while we're on viewer questions from Drew Muir. He's talking about a suggestion he has for the bench, and this really sparked my interest. Increase the bench to 10 players, but allow players to only use 5 substitutions, similar to football or soccer, wherever the hell you are in the world. Reduce the number of subs able to be used would add in some fatigue, particularly later in the game. More tactical, strategic thinking required from the coaching teams. Do you like the idea of that?
I do, because it adds a layer of, I suppose, skill. From a coaching point of view, the only thing that comes to my mind straight away, and we've sort of already spoken about it off air, but is what happens around an injury. If you've used your 5, can you still sub, or are they down to 14 men? That sort of impact. I'm just thinking we're trying to get, you know, we're going to this 20-minute red card, hopefully worldwide, to keep 15 on 15. It's just trying to think out how that may impact, or are you just holding onto 2 subs just in case for an injury late in the game? I'm not too sure.
Yeah, you'd have to think you stick with the similar rules to now, do you? In that when it's over, it's over.
Once it's done. But when there's an injury, if you've cleared your bench, they can send someone back on.
Yeah.
That's being subbed if they're not injured.
Yeah, you might end up with people doing some interesting things, like Rassi might pick, you know, 5 props and, end up running a whole bunch of different scrums over the course of the game.
The selection would be different because if you've only got 5, then you've got to have 3 props that are on the bench. But in saying that, you might see actually a different way of being able to play rugby. It might be, you know, a lot less kilograms in the front rowers, and they might have to drop a few kegs if it was down to 5 players, and you might only have 1 back, or you might not even carry backs back in to be able to, you know, guys play multiple positions, whether it's a winger that can cover 9 or a 12 that can cover 10 or 15 that can cover 10. So yeah, it'd be very interesting. It'd be very hard as a coach, I reckon, if you had 5 players to be able to choose from for the duration of an 80-minute match.
I suppose it would have to be inclusive of injuries. I'm just thinking, because what's the point? You can just go up to a player and say, look, we want you off, mate. Just fake an injury and we'll get Barry back on.
Yeah, so, like that doesn't already happen.
Yeah.
That does happen,
doesn't
it?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
I'm not sure.
You've never been involved in anything similar to that in your time?
Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
Never. Bryn, you've never had someone tell you, geez, got to go down, mate? So, well, we've investigated it. Let's have a look. Maybe give it a crack and
could trial
the
NPC,
see what happens. Mm. It certainly would make it interesting to see how it all play out. Add another little element of intrigue to the game.
Yeah.
But I mean, do we need more elements? Rugby's a pretty busy game.
Not another one for people to argue about, preferably.
Yeah, I know, but that's the point, isn't it?
41 minutes in play. 41 minutes in play. Let's just hammer that home.
Yeah, plenty of ball in hand. Jeez, I tell you what, in the Chiefs Drua game, there was plenty of ball in hand, plenty going on there.
That was one of the most physical displays of rugby, both attack and defence, I've seen, man. They were absolutely belting each other. Like, it was fierce and entertaining. Both, you know, 6 tries to 4. Really impressed with the Drua's ability to go to contestable kicks. They got a try off the back of one, you know, playing in the right part of the field. But as we know with the Chiefs' attack, it is one of the most clinical. And if you are going to run a rush D, you need to make sure everyone follows in. And they were caught short a number of times, and Damien did his thing. God, he played well.
Yeah, he's in pretty good form.
Man, so his passing, Bryn, was just exceptional. Not only the short balls, but the cutout ball.
if you can give Damien and your forwards as that first pod, you can run your lines and be real deliberate and being able to suck players in. They've got that many guys on outside Damien. It's hard defensively, especially when they're the big tight five boys in and around that position to make a tackle on Damien, or even a Jacobson or a Lock coming down into that space. But then the ability to be able to go at the back with the Stevenson or Satoru who's out the back. So yeah, defensively, you've just got to be on. And I think what they did really well on the weekend was being able to race into space, because the Fijians did fly out a lot and been able to leave a bit of space, and they were really good in and around being able to get their ball to space, whether it was Paul Heppy or a loose forward or Damien going through and offloading or a forward offloading as well. So yeah, I think their attacking ability at the moment, we've talked about a lot, they're the best team at the comp in doing it. And I think again as well, the Fijian Drua, they still had the opportunities. They just didn't get into the 22 as much as the Chiefs did. I think the Chiefs had 16 entries and, the Fijian Drua had 7. And, in the first half that they went down there, they had 3 that they were able to score points from that. But in the second half, they just weren't able to get in there as many times as the Chiefs did. So, I think defensively, they opened them up a little bit. But a really entertaining game, really enjoyed it. And both teams came in there, the physicality and some big hits as well, which we're accustomed to seeing from the Fijian Drua. But yeah, the Chiefs will be happy with their attack, and the Fijian Drua put up a good fight, I thought.
Now, when we're talking troublesome defence, let's talk a little bit of Opiki. The Poa fell apart against the Blues. They went down 52-5. That's the Hurricanes Poa against the Blues women in Opiki. What on earth happened there?
Well, the Blues have been going really well, but where they've sort of come unstuck and they had, couldn't beat the Chiefs, obviously got away with a must-do, is their offload game. But they had a lot less errors than they have previously, so a lot of the offloads were sticking. And once you got in behind that gain line, and they are very physical, the Blues. The Poa and the Blues are probably the most physical sides in terms of the collision area, and they went toe-to-toe. And the Blues, especially in that second half, just ran away with it. 18 clean breaks, 60% gain line. The one thing I will say, though, is I was talking quite positively about it. We were interviewing Alan Bunting after the Chiefs Manawa Matatu game, and I was like, oh, you must be really impressed. And he's the right man for the job, because he goes, the error rate's just too high. Mm. He goes, we've got to respect the ball. We've got to look after the ball way more. And I know he's interested in getting the balance of attack, so I asked him about the kicking, and he was like, yeah, there is more kicking, but what strategy goes into it? So although I think Opiki's been great, it was, from his point of view, he thinks is the athletes are getting better, so what he's seen is the defence is getting better. Mm. So sometimes playing too much is detrimental if you get those turnovers and so forth, so playing in the right ends of the field. So I just thought it was an interesting perspective on it, because maybe I got caught up in the hype thing, really enjoying the games, and but that error rate across all teams was over 20 turnovers this week. So it is something to be mindful of. But the reason the Blues ran away with it, because instead of them getting 1 out of 7 offloads, they're probably 4 out of 7.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Scored tries off the back of it.
And then it was all over. Speaking of all over, Matatu, Bryn, similar to the Crusaders, still no wins, bottom of the table, not looking great, went down 38-22 to the Chiefs Manawa. Are they in a position where they can come back into this competition, do you think, or is this going to slowly fade away?
Well, I think they can. There's a semi-final and final. Do you know what I mean? There's 4 teams, so they're going to get an opportunity to play in a semi-final. But I think what Gyps alluded to is pretty important when it comes to the Matatu. They're just giving away a lot of unforced errors. And so, look at the start of the game. That was probably their best facet of playing, obviously, and before Palomo was trying the 67th minute. They were able to build continuity. 22 phases in that first one, and then a great defensive hit from the Chiefs Manawa to be able to stop that ball. But I think, they're making far too many errors. And so when you give errors, and then, for that first 10 minutes, they were playing well, but then they were making errors. And then they also gave away penalties to give the likes of Connor line out more tries. She scores 3 tries, been able to go through a line-out more. So, yeah, they're just not getting it right in terms of their error rate, which has happened a lot around Super Rugby Opiki, but more so in Matatu in games. And then, giving away penalties in turns to give, the Chiefs line-out set-piece more inside the 22, you're going to score tries against them. So they have time. Like I said, they've got semi-finals coming up, but If they can take what they did in that the 22 phases and then Palomo's try, and they can get away those errors, then they do have a chance, because they do have some good quality cattle within that squad. But whether they can do it moving forward, I'm not too sure.
Well, Matatu have got the Blues this week. You mentioned before that they're pretty physical in that area. And it's away from home for them against the Blues. So do you see any chance of Matatu getting up in that game?
I do, because without the Chiefs Maul, they potentially still could have won that game. Mm. Like that was the difference. Like, one Maul was 30 out. Didn't even matter it was in the 22. They took it to the line. So it's pretty brutal, that Chiefs Maul. It's not as effective for the Blues. So I think they're in this race a lot closer, but off the back of that performance, you've got to think the Blues are going in pretty confident with a spring in their step, and at home, double header, you'd like to think the Blues will come away with a result.
Well, it's the Parsons.
Well, I would like.
Yeah, that's
I would like, sorry.
Exactly. Well, we're going to go the opposite way now, because we've got the Parsons double header. There should
beautiful.
Be a trophy for this week.
Yeah.
Of some sort.
I might win it for once.
Yeah. There's a good chance you win both.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So what do you think, Bryn? Are you backing Matatu?
Probably not backing them. I think it's tough. I think considering what the Blues did in that second half and that just the error rate that I've seen the last 3 weeks, and they just haven't been able to hold on to the ball. So... yeah, I will go the Blues for this week.
Yeah, here we go.
Stroke.
Here we go.
Stroke.
The big one's still to come later on when he's forced to...
I feel like we've been jinxed now. We've got the Hall jinx. He picked the power last week.
Got soap in my mouth right now.
He feels sick.
The Bryn Hall O-picky curse.
Yeah.
He did it to the power, now he's done it to the Blues.
Oh, no, it's a big year for Brennan saying things about teams out of Christchurch. He's already copped it once. Here we go. Maybe he'll cop it two more times today. We'll see how we go later on in the Super Rugby picks. Poa versus Manawa.
Chiefs Manawa.
Manawa away in Wellington.
They'll get the job done.
Yeah, same for you, Bryn. Okay. Rightio. Let's move ahead then, shall we? And get ourselves into the Super Rugby Tipping Comp. Go to the Super Rugby Tipping Comp, the Aotearoa Rugby Pod League. There's over 300 of you in the league. We've got a few people doing fairly well. Owen Carroll is up at the moment with 20 points. I'm down in 75th with 16. You're in 94 on 16 as well. Brynner is having a tough old time because of the Crusaders on 14 points. But there is lots of time to keep backing the Crusaders. And watch that fall further down. okay, before we get to the Crusaders Blues, which is later on in the weekend, let's start with our tips for the very front of the weekend, the Hurricanes versus the Rebels. That seems like a pretty straightforward pick there, Bryn.
Yeah, I'll go the Hurricanes on that one. Yep, I will.
Yep.
Hurricanes as well. Brumbies versus Moana Pacifica, based on last weekend.
Oh, God, both sides have confused me. I'm going to go Brumbies.
Brumbies at home, man. They've got 3 wins from 4, considering how average they've looked through most of it. They're actually in a pretty damn good position.
Yeah, yeah.
Not bad at all. Brumbies for you, Bryn?
Yep, I'll go Brumbies.
Okay. The draw at home against the Tars.
Ooh. Man, they've had a brutal draw, the Tars.
Yeah.
They've had like 4 New Zealand teams and now a Fijian trip. I'm going to have to go the Drua.
Yeah, I'll go Drua, but I'm a little bit nervous because we expect them to win. And I feel like, you know, there might be a banana skin game that they have throughout the year. And this could be the one against the Waratahs. But I'll pick the Drua.
Right, yeah. Okay, Bryn, Chiefs, Landers, Chiefs at home?
Yeah, Chiefs. Even though the Landers, you know, they've been playing some good footy and be disappointed against the Brumbies, but yeah, the Chiefs, too much firepower at the moment.
I'll get Chiefs for you as well. Okay, here it is. The Blues against the Crusaders. Blues at home. I'm
Blues.
Blues. Bryn, the Crusaders.
Crusade.
Haven't won a game away from home in a world of hurt.
Look at the face.
There is no part of you, your heart, your head, that thinks actually this could be the Blues.
It's all set up for them, I think. It's all set up for them to change. So I think if they continue their set piece, I can see Jip just smiling here. Oh my God, I've just got the camera right on Jip. I can just see Jip smiling here. I think with the set piece, if they can get themselves a bit of dominance around the set piece, and they can kick well, and they can make it really tight, because, you know, it has shown in the past, if it does get tight for the Blues against the Crusaders, the Crusaders tend to do come over the top. So I'm hoping that it continues that way. But very, very tough considering how the start has been 0-4. But I'll back Crusaders up in Eden Park.
I'm so nervous.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I just hope we're not the team that plays them into form. It's just, I don't know, I've just got so much mental baggage with the Crusaders winning last minute. But you have to think, if the Blues want to win this title, like, this is a game they need to make a statement.
Next week, we might have to replace this with a lounge. Jip will be lying back, talking through his deep-seated, traumatic past to the Crusaders.
There's no getting rid of it.
Blind faith.
That is the Picking Comp. Get online, get to tipping.super.rugby, get into the competition, the Aotearoa Rugby Pod League. Winner of that league at the end of the season will get a spot on the show. We'd love to hear your thoughts when we get to that point of the season about how you felt it went down, and maybe challenge us a few of our picks as well. That's the end of the show for today. Thank you very much for joining us once again on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. You can catch us, of course, on all of Sky's platforms, on YouTube, Rugby Pass's platforms, including Rugby Pass TV. You can catch us as an audio pod as well. So thank you very much for joining us. We'll catch you again next week. James Parsons, thank you very much as ever. Bryn Hall, appreciate it. Enjoy the game this weekend, tormenting James Parsons probably in the WhatsApp group as the Crusaders once again come to Auckland and...
No, Ross.
Okay, well, that won't be happening. Thank you very much. Watch it play out on Sky TV this weekend. See you next time. Mā te wā.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.